In the news analysis, there's quite a few bits and pieces from this last week, and it was interesting. There was one thing that came... Well, let me just read the actual clipping that's here. It says, the Food Agency criticised over the Cocklebed closures. And it says, the Food Standards Agency was heavily censored by MPs yesterday over its handling of a health scare involving toxins in shellfish. The Environment, Food and Rural Affairs Committee found that the agency inflicted very real and unnecessary damage on the shellfish industry by closing cocklebeds without proper consultation. Over the past 3 years, major cockle fisheries in the Thames Estuary, the Wash and the Bury Inlets in South Wales have been shut down after high levels of toxins were recorded. But fishermen claimed that the testing methods were unreliable, and the committee has said that the FSA, the Food Standards Authority, was slow to investigate alternative explanations for the results. It has used the precautionary principle and its commitment to science to disguise the fact that it has neither examined its own methods nor consulted the industry before inflicting very real and unnecessary damage, it said. Now, the reason why that... really came up is I was sitting listening to the radio yesterday morning, and this particular article or this particular issue was being discussed, and what in fact happened was that the Food Standards Agency had been doing some testing on the cockles. Cockles are shellfish, for those of you who don't other climes, but there are bivalve shellfish about 2 inches wide and people eat them. But they were doing testing, and what they did, they actually fed them to mice, and the mice developed symptoms of poisoning. So they said, right, there's something going on, there's some kind of a poison, but they couldn't highlight what the poison, what the toxicity was. And it's because they couldn't actually find the toxic element that the cockle industry is saying they don't know what they're talking about, and yet the Food Standards Agency is saying, no, we must do something to actually stop these people eating them because there's something going on. And I thought, you know, God's law and the way of God cuts right the way through. It's like a Gordian knot. They've got this great argument going on about whether, in fact, the Food Standards Agency was justified in banning the cockles from being eaten. And there's all these fishermen saying that they weren't. And yet the basic problem is whether, in fact, we should eat this stuff in the first place anyway. And it's a question of light that is given to those who, in fact, obey God, that are, in fact, obedient to the laws of God. And there's a world out there that really is cut off from God. If we just turn over to 1 Corinthians chapter 2, you find what the Apostle Paul says about this over in 1 Corinthians chapter 2. And I think even Mr. Armstrong, Mystery of the Ages, talks about how the understanding that God cut off the way to the tree of life was—he had that understanding, but he didn't have the full understanding until really the last few months of his life. Virtually, it's in the beginning of the Mystery of the Ages he mentions that. But this element, the fact that the world as a whole is cut off from God, well, it says in verse 7, we speak the wisdom of God in a mystery, even the hidden wisdom which God ordained before the world to our glory, which some of the princes of this world knew, for had they known it, they would not have crucified the Lord of glory. But as it's written, I haven't seen or ear heard or entered into the heart of man the things that God's prepared for them that love him, but God has revealed them to us by his Spirit, for the Spirit searches the things, yes, the deep things of God. And that's the only way that we are able to understand the things that we understand. There's absolutely no other way that we have the understanding of what's going on in this earth and what's actually happening in the plan of God. For what man knows the things of a man except the spirit of man that's in him? So the things of God knows no man but the Spirit of God. You cannot get them from any other source. And this is what people fail to realize when they put together doctrinal committees. You can't get it that way. It doesn't come that way. Now we have received not the spirit of the world, but the spirit that is of God, that we may know the things that are freely given to us of God, which things we speak not as the words which man's wisdom teaches, but which the Holy Spirit teaches, comparing spiritual things with those that have the Spirit. It'd probably be best with spiritual in the sense it's those that have the Spirit. But the natural man does not receive the things of the Spirit of God, for they are foolishness to him. Neither can he know them, because they are spiritually discerned. It is utterly impossible. So we have this great argument on the radio, as I mentioned, and here in the paper as well, over things which really there is no argument on, and there's no misunderstanding whatever, and yet they have an enormous amount of argument. And there's so many other things that you will find in the newspapers along those lines. There's one here, it says, anger over call to teach children atheism in school. A report urging the teaching of atheism in school as part of the religious education was condemned by critics yesterday as a betrayal of children and quite wrong. Lessons should be renamed religious, philosophical and moral education and teach different belief systems such as agnosticism and humanism according to the Institute for Public Policy Research. I mean, what are you going to teach people about agnosticism? Well, we don't know. Basically, that's what you're looking at. The left of centre think tank's report published today prompted a mixed response. The Church of England and Muslim Council of Britain were largely unconcerned, saying that atheism had always been discussed during religious education lessons. But the Campaign for Real Education said the teaching of non-religious beliefs would deny children their Christian heritage. And on it goes. It's interesting that it mentions here in a kind of an analysis column, it says, "Let the little children come to me," said Jesus. He didn't add, "but only after they've been encouraged to question their faith and made aware of the arguments for atheism." That is the proposal from the Institute for Public Policy Research, the New Labour think tank that's attempting to refashion RE lessons along progressive lines. Depressingly, it may succeed. And it goes on, it says, "This is admittedly a delicate area for liberals. How do they reconcile the desire to talk children out of their religious beliefs with their policy of genuflecting towards cultural traditions of ethnic minorities, most of which are explicitly religious? It would be interesting to watch a right-on primary school teacher attempting to explain to a devout Muslim father why his child should investigate atheism. But that's unlikely to happen. The proposals are not directly directed at Islam. The impulse behind them, like the decision to ban prayers from graduation ceremonies at Edinburgh University, which we reported today, is anti-Christian rather than anti-religious." And that's the essence of the whole thing. They are trying to tear down the religious heritage, the Judeo-Christian heritage of this country. And in doing so, if we, are the children of the light, we should be able to see that once they do that, they in fact lay the entire country open and are in fact destroying the very moral fabric of the country. If we go over to 1 Thessalonians 5, we read this a great deal, but it's just as applicable in this instance. It says, "The times and the seasons, brethren, we have no need that I write to you." That's to you, the church. That's you and me, because it's been recorded for us. "For you yourselves know perfectly that the day of the Lord so comes as a thief in the night. For when they shall say peace and safety..." So it comes as a thief in the night to people outside. "They shall say peace and safety, then sudden destruction comes upon them as travail or birth pains on a woman with child, and they will not escape. But you, brethren, are not in darkness that that day should overtake you as a thief." So we should be able to see the warning signs. We do not know exactly when, but these are part of the very warning signs of what's taking place. "You're all the children of light, and the children of the day. We're not of the night nor of darkness, therefore don't let us sleep as others, but let us watch and be sober." And it goes on, and as far as watching, it says, it talks about, "Let those that are of the day be sober," in verse 8, "putting on the breastplate of faith and love, and for a helmet the hope of salvation," the hope of rescue. There are spiritual qualities that we need to be continually watching too. "For God has not appointed us to wrath, but to obtain rescue by our Lord Jesus Christ, who died, that whether we are watching or sleeping, we'll live together with him. Therefore comfort yourselves and edify yourselves even as you so do." But you know, here we see this this instance where you've got atheism being taught, and yet at the same time, in a similar paper, it says, "The evangelical Christian was not sacked unfairly after refusing to work on Sundays, an appeal tribunal ruled yesterday." Now again, it's indication of all the mix-up that is there. I mean, Sunday isn't the day that we should be keeping. But the fact that he recognises that there is a day, he has some kind of an idea of a Christian heritage, And he goes on, he says, Mr. Copsey accused his former employees of treating him disgracefully. He said, yesterday, I'm a Christian and believe Sunday should be kept sacred as a family day. We're a Christian country and led by a monarch who's the head of the Church of England. We celebrate Christmas and Easter and give respect to all the other religions we live with. So, again, it shows the confusion that is there. So, again, we have a light that can cut right through all of the confusion. And the light comes from this word. It comes from the Spirit of God also. It's interesting that when you're looking at what it says in Matthew 25, there is a problem there with the oil and with, obviously, the light that comes from that oil. To give you, again, another indication of the confusion that is around, this is actually written, you see the letters to the editor on this subject of atheism and atheism already damaging our school children. This is coming from a reverend, a certain vicar, I won't give his name, but this is the letter, and I want you to notice the type of woolly logic that is there, or just woolly thinking. Sir, the fundamental reason why atheism should not be taught in our schools, report February 16th, is that it's illogical. Reason cannot prove a Christian God, but it can prove a God. If you were watching television and saw the line of dominoes falling over without seeing how the first visible domino fell, you would rationally conclude that although there may be any number of dominoes off screen that have fallen first, something, a finger, a gust of wind, must have started the process off. Otherwise, the dominoes would still be standing up. That thing must be something other than a stationary domino. Similarly, looking at the physical universe, we must logically conclude that something started it, and that something must be other than physical, and we call that thing God. So this is, again, this is the... You know, is it any wonder they think, right, we're not going to teach this kind of stuff. What science says about the evolution of the universe and life is often beautiful and illuminating. Our attempts to record particles seemingly randomly appearing once as time and space and physical laws is intensely interesting, but none of this impinges on the above argument, just as analysing how the dominoes are falling doesn't affect the fact that they are falling. Once we can accept that, religion becomes a genuine search for who or what God is. What that God is. That search is good. In goodwill will always be fruitful. Atheism is a logical attempt to stop that search and to leave life with no lasting meaning. We're imposing that uncritical emotional atheism once more and more on our youth and then wonder why so many of them are left directionless. But, you know, the direction, there are elements within what he says which are interesting, but the basic direction, the basic the way is totally missing. And unfortunately, again, we're looking at something. We're looking at this society, which is going in a certain direction, and we're looking at the what we actually have to say, and what Mr. Armstrong had to say to society. And it's as valid today as it ever has been. It's interesting that when you're looking at these ethnic issues, top police are actually failing. It says, police commanders are frightened of offering robust leadership when dealing with minor failings or complaints by black and ethnic minority officers because they fear accusations of racism and inquiry into employment practice in the Metropolitan Police heard yesterday. So the ethnic ideas, which are coming from paganism, are in fact mounting up. And at the same time, the Christian view, which is coming from scripture as a basis, is going down. And we see that within society. If you turn over to Isaiah 59, it says in verse 8, it says, the way of peace they don't know. And this is the problem. They literally just do not know. They cannot have spiritual principles because it requires a spirit mind to have those principles. There's no judgment in their going. They've made them crooked paths, and whoever goes therein will not know peace. Therefore is judgment far from us, neither does justice overtake us. We wait for light, and remember we just read in 1 Thessalonians that we're the children of light. We're waiting for light, but behold obscurity, for brightness, but we walk in darkness. And the society is becoming further and further away from this book, from the principles that were in this book that were used during the Victorian era to give a certain strength to the British people. and were used in America also to give a certain strength to the pioneers. And the further we get away from that, the more we will go down. We grope for the wall like the blind, and we grope as if we had no eyes. We stumble at noonday for the night. We're in desolate places as dead men. We roar like bears and mourn like sore doves. We look for judgment, but there's none. For salvation or rescue, but it's far from us. They try desperately to try and resolve the issues. But without the spiritual understanding, it's going to be impossible. Absolutely impossible. And down in verse 13, in transgressing and lying against the eternal, departing away from our God, speaking oppression, revolt, conceiving and uttering from the heart words of falsehood, and judgment is turned away backwards, justice stands afar off, for truth is fallen in the street, and equity cannot enter. Yes, truth fails. He that departs from evil makes himself a prey, is accounted mad, and the eternal saw, and it displeased him that there was no judgment. And he goes on to say that he is the one, therefore, that will go ahead and bring the right kind of justice and judgment. And this is why in chapter 60, verse 1, it says, "Arise, shine, for your light is come. The glory of the eternal is risen upon you. For behold, the darkness will cover the earth, and gross darkness the people. But the eternal will rise upon you, and his glory shall be seen upon you." And he's talking about Zion, for verse 20, "The redeemed shall come to Zion." And he's talking about spiritual Zion. "And the Gentiles, the nations, will come to your light, the kings, to the brightness of your rising." That's the purpose of the Bible study. That's the purpose of the things that we learn. It's the purpose of the church, is to make sure that we understand this way. And we therefore can make a discernment between the righteous and the wicked, as it says in Malachi, between those that serve God and those that don't. To give you an idea, you can look at certain things within the news, and there's one thing that again occurred to me looking at the newspaper article and looking at listening to something that was actually said on the news that occurred over in Iran recently. It's got this particular one, which was last Thursday. It said, "Runaway freight train explodes in Iran, killing 295. And, you know, we can read these articles and we think, oh, that's interesting. It says, "A runaway freight train laden with explosive mixture of fuel, fertilizers and sulfur came off the rails and blew up in northeastern Iran yesterday, killing almost 300 people and injuring hundreds more. The explosion was reported to have destroyed 5 villages, and windows were said to have shattered up to 7 miles away." Now, you've got 5 villages. Now, how far between villages are you going to have? I mean, you're not going to put a village right next to each other. You're going to put villages, what, 2 miles away? Must be about 2 miles between a village, perhaps even more. So if you've got 2 miles between villages and you put 5 villages in a pattern, and you put 2 at the top and 1 in the middle and 2 at the bottom, you're looking at a distance between this ring that goes round from where the train maybe goes through the middle of about 4 miles, or maybe a little bit more than 4 miles. So there's a kind of epicentre of about 4 miles there. Now, what it's mentioning here is that this runaway freight train, laden with fuel, fertilisers and sulphur, came off the rails and exploded. Now, all you have to know is that a very little bit, I mean, it gives in this article, it says at the end, it says, "Fuel and fertilizer are often mixed to make homemade bombs." And they are. That's what the IRA have used for ages. And if you get fuel and you get fertilizer and you get sulfur and you mix them all together, and very, very carefully mix them together, because if you don't, it's likely to explode on you, you can make a devastating bomb. But you don't transport them like that. You don't mix your fertilizer, your fuel, and your sulfur together and then load them into 50 railway carriages and trundle off down the road. It just doesn't work that way. You put sulfur in one, you put fuel in another, and you put fertilizer in another. And chances are you'll keep the fertilizer and the fuel apart, because what happens is the fertilizer, it's ammonium nitrate, I believe, is the real dangerous one. It releases oxygen. And it's the mixing of something that releases oxygen, it doesn't matter what it is, saltpeter is used in gunpowder, with something that burns. It doesn't matter what it is. If you mix something that releases oxygen with something that burns, you have an explosive mixture. And this is why they use fertilizer and fuel, or fertilizer and gunpowder, sulfur or whatever. But you cannot get an explosion just by having these things there. It doesn't work that way. So this article is a lie. Now, what exactly happened? It's anybody's guess. I mean, you can start suspecting all kinds of things there. But you're looking at an explosive. You're looking at 300 people, five villages completely wiped out. What on earth was either on that train or around that train to give that? Let's say, all you need to do is just think. But the world doesn't think. It puts out path like this, and it allows people to think, oh, well, yes. And most, vast majority of people would look at this and would never bat an eye. You know, we've got to have a little bit more discernment and realize that, hey, there are things that in the news that we read that are lies. They are outright lies. And this is one of them. It's a very blatant one. And it's got pictures here of bodies all around. You've got a kind of twisted wreckage of a train. But, you know, there are certain things that, you know, that have been... the top of one of the carriages seems to be, or one of the things seems to be ripped apart, but it's nothing. To produce the devastation that is there, it's the entire train would have been completely destroyed. It's again, more of this area that the world cut off from God, it exists in lies. The very news media itself, much of the stuff that you're reading, is lies. Now, who had this explosive mixture, which quite frankly, when you're destroying five villages like that, you're looking at some kind of a weapon of mass destruction. I don't know what it was, I've no idea, but you don't take out five villages with just, you know, I mean, I doubt even if you would with 50 carriages loaded with, I mean, let's see, what was the actual epicenter on something like Hiroshima? Was that about 5 miles? I'm not sure what it was. It must have been something close to that, but that was 20 kiloton tons. That's 20 kilotons of TNT. And 20 kilotons would take, if you work it out, it would take, say, at 100 tons per carriage, you're looking at 200 carriages, and this was only 50. And that was TNT, and this was a much less explosive mixture than that. So the whole thing just simply does not add up. And we need to be aware of this, and we need to realize that we are being lied to, even in the news media. Even in the news media. Along this way, it says, suspicions mount that Iranians are seeking the atomic bomb. It says, United Nations nuclear inspectors have discovered components for sophisticated uranium enrichment equipment that Iran failed to declare, deepening suspicions that Tehran is seeking an atomic bomb. The unravelling of the nuclear network operated by Abdul Khan, the father of Pakistan's bomb, has exposed Iran to ever more damaging disclosures of its attempt to hide nuclear-related facilities. So whether in fact it was something along those lines that happened with this runaway, quote, runaway train, unquote, we don't know. I mean, that's basically, we don't know. Another item here. This is coming from Fortune magazine. I happened to subscribe to a computer magazine that went bust, I don't know how many years ago now, 2 years ago or something, and they transferred the names to Fortune magazine, and I've been getting a free issue of Fortune ever since, which is quite interesting. But this particular one was from it was 2004 Auto Preview, whatever that is. Anyway, but it says, It's Armageddon, who's in charge here? And he gives it, again, here's a scenario. It is January the 20th, 2005. A suitcase nuclear bomb explodes on the National Mall during an inaugural ceremony. The incoming president and vice president, the incoming cabinet, none yet sworn in, the entire congressional leadership, most of the rank and file, and the whole Supreme Court are lost. All those in line of succession to the presidency are gone. It's unclear who will be in charge. Trying to be helpful, governors, generals, surviving members of the Congress, perhaps the outgoing Secretary of State, announce their availability. But for days or weeks, there is no official body or person to sort out competing claims. Now, this is being said, and it's being said in earnest, within a respected magazine today. Eventually, a small group of surviving Congress people announces that it constitutes a quorum. A literal handful elect a speaker who becomes acting president under the authority of the Presidential Succession Act of 1947 for a full 4 years, with power, among other things, to nominate all 9 Supreme Court justices for life. It's scary, huh? A few years ago, that horrific scenario would have been the stuff of Tom Clancy's novel. Since 9/11, it has gone from the fanciful side on the ledger to the real-world side, one of a series of potential threats never imagined by the framers of the Constitution or by the subsequent lawmakers who wrote the law governing the presidential succession. Now, as I say, here is a respected magazine that sees, you know, potential problems there, and it doesn't have really answers. It can't put the answers together, but there is a climate which is very unsettled. The people in the world that look at the world are very, very unsettled. The people in the know that look at the world, when we look at the news that's coming to us, they will fob us off with a lot of stuff that just simply isn't true. We've got to be aware of that. Such as I mentioned, this one, which is pretty obvious, this runaway freight train. There's another article here in the Fortune magazine. It says the climate could change radically and fast. That would be the mother of all national security issues. It says global warming may be bad news for future generations, but let's face it, most of us spend little time worrying about it as we did about Al-Qaeda before 9/11. Like the terrorists, though, the seemingly remote climate risk may hit home sooner and harder than we ever imagined. In fact, the prospect has become so real that the Pentagon's strategic planners are grappling with it at the moment. The threat that has riveted their attention is this: global warming, rather than causing gradual, centuries-spanning change, may be pushing the climate to a tipping point. Growing evidence suggests that the ocean atmosphere system that controls the world climate can lurch from one state to another in less than a decade, like a canoe that's gradually tilted until suddenly it flips. Scientists don't know how close the system is to a critical threshold, but abrupt climate change may well occur in the not-too-distant future. If it does, the need to rapidly adapt may overwhelm many societies, thereby upsetting the geopolitical balance of power. Now, climate change could be the trigger. You know, Mr. Armstrong he had a number of scenarios that he used, that what is going to be the trigger that forces Europe to actually arise as the dominant force within the world. We don't know what it is. We don't know what it is. And what is going to bring down America? We don't know what it is. He used terrorism at one time, he used finances at another, he used famine at another. Climate change like this could well be the case. It says our hemisphere's Achilles heel. It says if abrupt climate change is on the way, the driving force will probably be a great ocean current that one scientist calls the Achilles heel of our climate system. The current, known as the Great Conveyor, sweeps north through the Atlantic, carrying warmth from the tropics to the eastern US and northern Europe, before looping south. If the current shuts down, which apparently can occur rapidly during times of global warming, the huge heat pump goes off, potentially causing drastic weather changes in just a few years. And the results are, deprived of the flow of warmth from the tropics, northern Europe could become more like Labrador or Siberia. That's us. So we would suddenly find that the winters would turn into something like Labrador or Siberia. Meanwhile, in North America, drought, coupled with higher winds, could ravage the Midwest farmlands, and that's the breadbasket of the world. Past conveyor shutdowns are linked also to massive fires in North America, which left telltale ash in recent Arctic ice. So we're looking at massive fires as well, because of the dryness of those particular times that they are examined. But it was an interesting article, and It talks about an old pattern could then re-emerge, which is warfare defining human life. It says nuclear arms proliferation is inevitable. Oil supplies are stretched thin as climate cooling drives up demand. Many countries seek to shore up their energy supplies with nuclear energy, accelerating nuclear proliferation. Japan, South Korea, Germany develop and Germany develop nuclear weapons capabilities, as do Iran. Egypt and North Korea, Israel, China, India, Pakistan are also poised to use the bomb. The scenario that is being painted by that particular article shows how the geopolitical the geopolitics of the world is changed by the climate change. And it is. It's something that we need to be aware of. One other thing, I don't know whether actually this found its way into this. No, it's not. I don't know where it went. There was a particular article that I saw about Israel's... No, I know it was. It was actually on the web. It was about Israel and the strategic nature of a pipeline that is actually going north to south down to Al-Aqaba, I think down in the south, going on to the Red Sea. And the oil is now going out of the southern part of Israel, coming from Russia. So the oil is moving now from Russia down through the center of Israel, right down to the south, bypassing the Suez Canal, bypassing South Africa, and all, you know, going around the Cape. And it's therefore flowing from that point out to China and the Far East. Now, it has only started last November. This has actually begun. But again, you're looking at a geopolitical thing. You're looking at a very strategic, making Israel and making that area of the world a strategically important area. It's not just the oil pipeline going across to Turkey, which then feeds the oil from Russia and Kazakhstan and so on, out into European areas. But the greatest increase within this world for oil use is China. And it's coming out of this link. Russia is actually selling it out from the link. So and also the Far East generally. So again, these kind of shifting balances. There are things happening in the world that we watch and we keep our eyes open, and we realize that the woman is pregnant. The church is pregnant. It is waiting for the very manifestation of the sons of God. We know that the earth is going to go into a tribulation, sore trial. And we're watching that particular scenario. The world is totally oblivious to it. And we just need to make sure that we keep alert, that we keep close to God, that we keep on our knees. It says, you know, that we watch unto prayer, that we do study, that we do what we need to do, because the only source of our strength is in God himself, and we must never ever take our eyes off that, because that is absolutely crucial to every single one of us.